exciting. And my name is Frances Hanlon. I'm the president of the Baja Flame Foundation, who's sponsoring this teleconference today. I just want to say a word because I just think it's important. It is beautiful here. It is springtime, I tell you. It doesn't get any better than Colorado in the spring when the river starts to roar down the valley. All the squirrels are out, the robins are back, the grass is greening up. Actually, the squirrels look pretty fat. They did pretty well this winter. And so I just think it's really important they're with us every day. That is one of the things that's really been so beneficial for me, to really stop and notice the incredible blessings that we all have every day. I don't know how I failed to mention my kitties. You know, they're not worried about the coronavirus in the least. They just want to make sure that they have time on our laps. In fact, they have really been loving this time because I'm home all the time. They think it's terrific. So anyway, it's a time of wonder, a time of challenge, all of it together. I want to say Vajra Flame is really trying to reach out at this time when there are many, many people who have questions and special needs and really are looking for spiritual guidance. And so we are offering this to you, as I said, as a free teleconference. We're also aware that many of you have been hit hard financially right now. But for those of you who are able, we would really appreciate a donation to our organization, because we are going to try to do a lot of extra things at this time. It's vajraflame.org, VAJRAFLAME.org, and you can certainly find us at our website. Well, I will say we are all in this together, aren't we? And in my personal opinion, there may never have been a more important time in our lives than right now. I think we're poignantly aware of this. It's really a collective spiritual call to wake up. Master is always talking about waking up and dropping our habituated trance states that so many of us live our lives from, our everyday scurrying here and there. And so I'm very, very excited that we have this opportunity this morning to let you hear from a real spiritual master. Some of you are probably familiar with Master DK, some of you might not be, but he is a being of immense wisdom and also has the uncanny ability to speak to each individual person in a way that's very clear, not filled with a lot of spiritual clutter, just getting right to the point. And so this morning we have that incredible gift to participate in the wisdom of the Master. He has been working in close conjunction with Kathleen Kingdon for 35 years now, and they sort of have a seamless partnership. Kathleen makes this look very easy, but I can tell you she spends hours every day, every single day, in his energy field, bringing forth his work. She's working on compiling some new books right now. She's very busy at that. And Kathleen, I don't know if you're going to speak to this or not, but we're hoping to have a Matter of Mind class before too long that you can all attend via the a teleconference. But anyway, without any further ado, I would like to introduce Kathleen and have Kathleen introduce Master. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is really exciting to consider all the places in the world that we are connecting in this moment together. I think that's been difficult for our world. It's easier to divide, and I guess the old phrase is divide and conquer, but to everyone pull back into their own little zone or their own little realm. And unfortunately, that just isn't going to work. as we go forward into the new age, we need to love each other. We need to be a part of one community. And so without saying much more than that, I'll get Master. I'm sure he has something interesting and insightful to say about this time we're in. And then the purpose of this was to let people ask questions. So one of the things you can do is type them into the chat box, and Dale will be monitoring that to keep track of it. I won't. I can't do that and bring through Master. And then I think there's also a way where you can raise a hand on this system, and we can take a question live if anyone wants to do that. So give me just a moment. I'll get Master, and he's all yours. Well, good morning, or at least it's morning here. I guess we could say it's always morning somewhere, and maybe we just put ourselves in the fresh glow of that morning somewhere every day. There's something about the fresh light on a fresh day, isn't there? In fact, I can tell you that at about a half an hour before the sun actually rises, it's a time when all the birds come out and they start singing. And the reason for this is that the oxygen saturation in the air is higher at that time of day than it will be for the rest of the day. But once the sun comes up and busyness starts happening, suddenly we're back to our levels of oxygen that are roughly about half what they used to be. So if we continue to burn our rainforests and if we continue to pollute the air, there will be consequences to pay. Indeed, there already are. One of the things that has been happening has had to do with the beautiful pictures taken from space, where it can be seen that the air pollution all around the Earth has gone down. The skies are clearer, even in places where we're not previously able to hear the birds because there was just so much going on, so much human traffic, so much automobile traffic, people are hearing birds again. And it seems to me like that is an important thing to notice. It's very easy when you're going through a time that where the whole world is distressed. It's very easy to get too much of the bad news. Now, I'm not suggesting you don't listen to the news. You need to know what's going on. How can you bless the world if you don't know where the worldly needs are? And indeed, I hope all of you in your meditation time are taking moments to consider what this is like for this whole planetary system full of people. Almost and a half billion nowadays. That's such a big number, nobody can even figure out what it means, really, other than perhaps knowing how many zeros go after the seven. But it's too big for ordinary mind to even contemplate. And thus, what we find is that it's that the bigness of it all sometimes can be overwhelming. Sometimes it can be seemingly too big. And often people feel very small in comparison to the whole. In other words, we could say, well, what is the worth of one person in a throng of 7.5 billion? But that's not the way we should look at it. We should each look at it as if every person can make a difference. Well, that's why I really wanted to talk to all of you this morning, because sometimes when the news is bad and there's a lot of news, or sometimes when the issues are so big, most people feel helpless. Now, as I tried to point out on that other teaching that was recently released, that there's something about helplessness and fear. They play off each other. And I think the most dangerous thing is the level of fear that's arising. And so I have a question for you. Are we really in a pandemic caused by a virus? Or are we in a pandemic of fear? And if you really think about that, it might occur to you that perhaps a pandemic of fear is sure to bring forth a physical pandemic of some kind, because the mind, you see, sets the field for all of one's experiences. And while this is certainly not news, spiritual teachers have been saying this for eons, well, millennia, people often don't get it. And they maybe feel their own inner space with helplessness or with fear. And frankly, that's not helpful. Now, I'm not saying we should go into denial and just say, oh, well, you know, if I'm not afraid, I just won't get sick. And that's not always the case. See, viruses are very interesting. And I noticed one of the questions, first question that was proffered this morning was this virus created in a laboratory? Now, I know there are a lot of theories circulating. And I guess I'd like to ask you not to engage them. Because, you see, it doesn't matter where it came from, really. Everyone has to deal with what's going on now. And unfortunately, sometimes these theories are not based in truth. But even if they were based 100% truth, what could you do about it? You could sit and worry and stew, or you could be angry at someone, or you could feel helpless and hopeless. But you see, none of those will contribute to your spiritual growth. And this is a time that's very important for paying attention to your spiritual journey. You see, I've had, over the years, many, many students say, oh, I'd love to go on a retreat. But, you know, I'm just too busy. And so many people are finding they're not that busy now. Maybe they're too busy watching things on the internet. Some of them are very useful. But you have to be kind of a monitoring device for yourself. What is good for your mind? If it's causing you to stay awake at night, or if it's causing you to be angry at all the leaders around the world that maybe weren't prepared for this, or those who refuse to get prepared even in the face of tragedy happening all around them, that really doesn't contribute to anything that's holistic for a whole planet full of people. So I encourage you to, yes, be apprised of what's going on in the world. This is where you live. It's where you love. It's where you're taking your spiritual path, hopefully your spiritual initiations. And this is the time, really, of coming together. Now, one of the things that has been very beautiful has been people rising to the occasions. We, some of you hear or read of situations in Italy where every evening people go to their windows and they all sing, so that people who are alone will feel as if there's family around. Isn't that lovely? You have all these workers who are out serving you, in whether it's grocery stores, whether it is in the medical field. I know the doctors and nurses get a lot of credit, and they should get it. They deserve every bit of it. I hope you are praying for them, their safety. I hope you are sending them and surrounding them all with light, because they're really working overtime, long hours, which everyone knows has a negative effect on the immune system, a lot of stress, which everyone knows has a negative effect on the immune system, but there they are showing up anyway. And there was recently an article in one of the papers in New York where a nurse was writing to people with guns and said, will you please stop shooting yourselves for the time of this virus? We don't have room in the hospital to take care of your victims. Now, isn't that an amazing thing to appear in a large newspaper? Will you please stop the violence because we can't care for it? That is the state of at least one place in the world. And when you look at what's coming out on the other side, this selfless dedication of doctors and nurses, but even the janitors who clean up the floors where all of the contaminated bandages or sometimes gauzes or masks, face masks that are put on people. Those ventilators have to be cleaned. Somebody has to do that. And it is really important to have a very big and thankful heart for the contributions of those who are out there serving everybody else in this time of sequestering, in some cases quarantine, or what has been called lockdown. So if we can really look at the bigger picture, in one way, it doesn't matter where the virus came from. Now, this I can tell you, this one was not made in a laboratory. It did, in fact, come from, it was an animal virus that got transferred into humans. And I think probably there's a at least the possibility that you will see more of this coming. Because you see, remember, all of creation is one experience. It feels like there's 7.5 billion people, and indeed there are 7.5 billion bodies occupying space on the planet, and that's just the humans. But you see, this is a time of bringing together all sentient beings. All beings are really part of the divine. You know, you see the poor little bat or pangolin, whoever's being blamed for the jumping of this virus into the human realm. Who's to say it wasn't in some sort of a spiritual space trying to move to a higher level? And I know when I put out the first message about the virus, one of the things that I said was, don't hate the virus. Don't hate anyone, for that matter, or anything. Don't hate the virus. It is not a malicious thing. It, like everything else, is trying to access an inalienable right, I'm told, by the Constitution of the United States to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, granted, most people have no idea what happiness looks like at the level of a virus, and that's all right. But if you can see that anytime there is a huge something this big, it's involving the entire world, and there will be more countries, and even within countries, more areas come online with the virus as we go along. It can't, at this point, be helped. And I just notice people get so anxious because we don't have a vaccine. Well, how could you have a vaccine? And a vaccine isn't going to help someone that's already got the virus, because that gives them a weakened version of the virus so that their own body will build up antibodies. Now, there is something to be said for doing immunoglobulin studies where you take the antibodies that someone who has healed from the virus and make that into a serum that can be used as a medication for people. That's one way of doing it. But you see, it's so easy to divert from the real issue, which is, what is this epidemic or pandemic asking of me? Some of you have libraries of spiritual books which you've never read. They just sit there because you're busy. And yes, things are very frenetic and hectic at this time on the earth. Right now, not so much. And that's kind of an amazing breather, isn't it? I see people connecting with family members, not necessarily from whom they were estranged, but from whom they haven't spoken in a while. Perhaps they live miles apart. And some really beautiful things are coming out of that. That's a kind of wholeness. And at least to this point, we have seen humanity really rise to the highest level of really wanting to help each other. People all over the U.S. are getting together and sometimes doing it individually or sometimes with two or three people and making face masks for medical personnel, because somehow this amazing country with all of its resources and all of its supposed know-how just can't get its hands on enough face masks to protect the people who are serving the sick, let alone put anything on the sick. So when you see things like that happening, suddenly we begin to say, oh, perhaps the Aquarian age, or at least the energies of it, are filtering through. Because that is a real example of the we. And those of you who have been around my teachings for the last several years know I've talked about a great deal about how the Piscean age was about the I, the individual. And unfortunately, it had one of the net results was that it pushed the ego to such a huge and a massive thing that it's now very hard to rein in. But it also did something else. There's so many wonderful things that technology can do, like bring us all together in this moment. And that's important and wonderful, and we should celebrate it. But there's also a spin-off effect that for certain people, it has made them more isolated. They do all of their correspondence and communication online. In fact, I notice among younger people, say 25 or younger, in the States, they have a real hesitancy about talking to each other on the phone. And in a way, that is kind of epidemic form here. They use their phones, they text, and they play games, and they do all sorts of other things. They certainly get news online and so on. But what could be something that really allows communication, let's say at the second level, you're not face to face, but you hear the person's voice. Or perhaps with video, you hear the voice and you see the person. This is not the same as being in the same room, but right now on the planet, that's not a wise idea. And it's really, and I heard someone the other day saying, I float through the streets of various cities now and then just to see what's going on. And I heard someone say, well, you know, I'm really healthy. And who cares if I get it? I'll get over it. This person had no idea that it was a male, that he might carry something and essentially have no symptoms himself, but be contaminating other people. It just didn't occur. And it wasn't so much that he thought about it and said, I don't care. In his words, he said, I don't care if I get it. But those mask a whole lot of ignorance. You see, separation, not seeing other people as equally a part of the divine as are you, is a big mistake. Some of you have heard me tell a story about this back in the 60s when psychedelic drugs were being studied in some of the major campuses. Medical research usually, but it got into the hands of people who were experimenting for other reasons as well. Well, there were a couple of fellows who were on the campus of Berkeley in California at the time. And they took some psilocybin under a controlled situation. And both of them had this huge and expansive opening in consciousness. And when they came out of it, they looked at each other and one said, I'm God. And the other said, so am I. And the two of them, I mean, the perception is accurate. That's true. But they went out on campus and started announcing to everybody that they were God, as if other people weren't. And so you see, with the ego, it's so easy to miss the bigger picture, isn't it? I've had my consciousness opening experience, and so I am one with God. But can I see that everyone else is too? Now, if we can honor that that is really the case, that you're not separate from the divine, whether you say God, the divine, the supreme, whatever, it doesn't really matter. This is a time for coming together. It's a time for sharing wisdom. Because you see, every spiritual tradition out there has some kind of wisdom. And if we can share that at a time when humanity really needs their divine roots to be activated right now. In the Buddhist tradition, at least in the Tibetan, the Zen Buddhist too, we talk about the ground of being. And people say, well, what is that? It's not something that's physical, but it is essentially the divine. Now, you know, some people say that, well, you know, Buddhists are atheists, and that's maybe said by someone who doesn't really understand the tradition. And there's a reason for that. I think when Buddha was asked if there was a God or a soul, he said, I find no evidence for one. But it kind of got translated as if he was speaking universally. And I think really what was happening was he was speaking to a person, because this is how he did it. He was saying, I find no evidence for a God as you see God. I find no evidence for the soul as you are interpreting that. Because he did have throngs, large people that came to hear him. But most of his teaching was really one-to-one. You could be in a crowd of 1,000 people, and you would feel as if the Buddha was speaking just to you. And this says something about the Buddha, but it also says something about, I think, how sometimes spiritual teachers can be misunderstood. There are Buddhists who will say there is no God, and that's all right. They don't have to see it, but they all honor the ground of being. And if you ask them what's out there in the universe, they will all say, oh, consciousness, that's all there is. So we can rest our case on that, can we not? But the idea, you see, that we can share these wonderful things from some traditions that are very, very old. And I want to pull through some of those again because the world so needs it right now. But every morning, I'd like all of you to get up and ask yourself, am I experiencing a pandemic caused by a virus? Or am I experiencing a pandemic of fear? Knowing, of course, that fear will strengthen the path of the virus. Now, viruses are very interesting things. Scientists disagree. Some see them as living things. Others do not. They certainly do have certain of the life processes. They certainly multiply, and they certainly feed on certain substances. Those of you who have high sugar intake know that the virus loves that. So you might want to modify that a little bit. So they do feed. There's a question about whether they really breathe or respire. And there's evidence, I think, on both sides of the fence for that. But you see, viruses are something that many people have said are really alien to the life forms that happen on Earth. So for many people, it seems like then there must be some nefarious force that is bringing them about. But I'd like you to consider that possibly it has something to do with the consciousness of the people who are on the planet or who are part of the experience. You see, when you feed anything fear, whatever is fed gets bigger. It's just the way it is. And I understand people are uneasy. They want to take precautions. And many people are perhaps more concerned that they don't unwittingly give the virus to someone else. Maybe more concerned about that than whether or not they're carrying the virus. You should be careful. You should use what you know in terms of modern medicine now. Does it have the last word yet? I don't think so. But the important thing is, whenever you are on the planet in a given time, you use what is available. This is how all the spiritual teachers did it. And this is how you need to do it as well. And so it is, think about who benefits by whether or not the virus was created. And then think about, could it be a collective manifestation of fear? You see, I think, and I'd like you to just consider this. I'm not going to tell you this is the way it is, because each of you has to discover this for yourself. You have your own connection to the divine. If I can help you strengthen that, it is my utter pleasure to do that. But you must vibrate the strands along that connection that allows for the transformation, transferring of energy from one level to another level. That's what you do. But if a part of your mind is obsessed with or taken over by fear, well, the first thing that should be very obvious is that the communication going through these strands of awareness, live awareness, are probably going to be faulty. Probably it's not going to come through clearly. One of our persons this morning was asking about a comet that hasn't been here for 6,000 years. But let me tell you about comets. Back when that comet last passed over, at least for significant portions of the West, certainly all across Europe, it affected North America, not when that one came by, but when other comets came by. There was this belief, and to some extent it was in Asia as well, to some extent in India, to some extent in China. But basically the belief was that when a comet went over, that was a sign from the divine that someone was going to die. And the belief was also that often it would be a person who was high placed in society, a ruler, a king, a patriarch or matriarch, someone who had, let's say, power, or they were influential. Well, the interesting thing is that as that idea spread around the world, guess what? Every time a comet appeared, somebody died. And every now and then it would be a king or a prince or somebody in a high station of life. And this just seemed to confirm it over and over and over again. In fact, in one comet, people in Europe and somewhat on the east coast of the U.S., hid. They all got together and decided they were all going to die together. So they all got together in one building and in fear and trembling waited through the night that the comet was to pass over. And of course it was passed over several nights, but there was one that the astrologer said, this will be the most important, the most powerful one. And the interesting thing was that in their fear, many of them were praying and in their prayers fell asleep. And when they awakened the next morning, everyone was still alive. The world had not come to an end, as was predicted. And this was a huge turning point in this kind of mass hallucination about what comets are. And perhaps there will come a time when humanity looks back and sees the fear of viruses and the kind of the holy grail of vaccinations. Now, or vaccines. It's a mixed thing, really, vaccines, because they have saved a lot of people and there are complications with them. But also the fact that some people have made the vaccine into God or the divine, and that's inappropriate because, as you know, what worked for the flu last year doesn't seem to work for the flu this year. And this has been one of the frustrations with medical research and science. They want to find a vaccine that will work for every type of influenza. And they're never going to find one. Because as soon as they get one, the little, should we call them critters, change. And they're no longer receptive to it. You know, it's very interesting. And Kathleen attended a physics lecture in Aspen a few years ago. Aspen has a huge think tank of the most brilliant minds in the world. And they had ran this series in the middle of the winter every Wednesday night. They had a physicist from some place in the world talking about their work. And often it was very clear that they were struggling to deliver a speech in English. And Kathleen said, I didn't understand much, but the slides were great. And of course, they were for a good reason. But there was one fellow recently, and he was doing some work with cancer. He was a physicist by trade, and the Cancer Association had come to a group of physicists and said, we need your help. It's clear we don't know how to think outside the box. We need other scientists who think differently when they approach things because our cures aren't really going anywhere. Well, this one man, and this, in a way, it was kind of a simple little experiment that went on, and it basically had what looked like some of the little computer plates, thin plastic. It had, looks like little mazes in it where things could wander around. And into that, he put cultures of a certain type of cancer. And then into one side, where he normally fed the sugar solution that fed them, he put in a drug that was being tested. And what he noticed was that in the first go-round, something like 98% of the cancer cells died. And so he wondered, well, what would happen? He's the only one really that was thinking this. Everybody else said, oh, we've got the cure. But he said, well, I want to see what happens to the 2% that remain alive. So he let them multiply and flourish a little bit until there were a sizable community, and he injected it again. This time, 50% of them died. And thought, oh, this is interesting. So he let them recuperate again and did it a third time. Then it was down to about only 20% died. And he was just to the point when he gave the lecture that he had the last dose that he had given, only 2% of the cancer cells died. And he said his message to the cancer research people is, you're not thinking long enough down the road. Because he says, what I noticed was these little cells at first were poisoned by your drug. But by the end, they were using it for food. It made them able to multiply more quickly and have hardier, stronger offspring. Now, I know that we're not talking about cancer here, but there is something I think that can be taken from that example and perhaps applied to what's going on for people today. And that is, there are certain things that seem to feed the virus. And, you know, I know it is difficult to feel like you're isolated, particularly if you are afraid or if you think you have a disease. It is incredibly interesting to see what that mental state does to the person. And the person, of course, feels like they're controlled by the fear. Nobody thinks that, I don't have to feel fear here. I can just decide not to. And while in a way that is true, it doesn't feel that way. And so we have to say that what feeds cancer cells, now we can see it is many of the agents that are given to kill them, but fear also feeds cancer cells. Cancer cells also feast on sugar when it's in your body. And so sometimes when people come to me and they have the disease, the first thing I say is, no sugar. And there are some people who cannot give up sugar, even in the face of knowing that it's feeding the very cancer they want to heal. It's very interesting. And you have to ask yourself a little bit about what's going on, because usually when people go in for their chemotherapy sessions, as they're going out, what is there but a big dish of candy, straight sugar. We have to say, what's going on here? Is it, well, the rationale is that one piece won't hurt anyone, and it does put sugar into the bloodstream, and some people are kind of weak and compromised, and theoretically this is supposed to do something good. However, it's not the best sugar even for the bloodstream. But if you can understand that your state of mind creates your reality. Now, why would I say that? Think about it. Oh, I'm not the first to say it. It's very true. You become what you think about. You become whatever you obsess about. If you hate something, you will become it. Maybe not in this life, but perhaps in the next. If you fear something, you attract it. And that's just the way it all works. And so there is something about really managing your fear. And I recommend doing mantra. I mean, my goodness, we did the mantras for Yemen. And some of you worked very hard at that, and I really thank you for it. It was so important. Yemen, unfortunately, is still a mess. And very few of you even think about doing mantras for Yemen anymore. We did that. See how the mind works? We did that. No, we're still living with the problem. And it's the same way on the last teaching that went out. Basically, you were provided, I think we put it on the blog as well, some links for some mantras, healing mantras. One was for healing the world. One was for healing the self. And the way that mantra works, the one that's self-healing, it's only about one thing. Total alignment with your divine essence. You see, that part of you cannot get sick. The ego part of you that fears, the rational mind part of you that has to figure everything out and look at the statistics and say, yes, we see, here are the curves. They are interesting, but they don't have to be that way. But if enough people believe they're that way, they will play out. What you, all of you, and everyone else in the earth should be doing now is calling forth radical healing for every person on earth. Now, healing is a broad scope. It doesn't just take into account the virus. That might be where we start, because that's what's up for you. That's what's come into the collective reality for you to address, each of you. Don't hide out and think you're helpless. Rather, come out of that shell of helplessness. Get out of the illusion of fear. For it is an illusion. You know, a lot of people confuse fear with fright, don't they? If you step into an intersection, let's say you're in a busy, crowded street corner, and you're going to cross the street, and you look both ways, the light says it's your time to go. You step into the street, but suddenly someone who's driving out of control roars through the intersection and nearly hits you. What arises is fright, and it's legitimate because you were in danger. But fear is something where the mind remembers things from the past and projects them into the future and then has a reaction to them. So it's a fairly complicated process. First, you have to remember. You know, I sometimes tell the story of rabbits. You know, rabbits are they're very sweet little animals, but they're food for an awful lot of predators, and that's probably why they proliferate so much. But the thing about rabbits are, every time you turn around, there's a threat. It can come from above, a bird of prey. It can come from on the ground, a snake. It can come from predators that are also on the ground, which the rabbit will usually try to outrun. But think of it, everywhere it goes, it has to watch out for, well, if it doesn't, it will become somebody's food. And so if you look at what happens for the rabbit, let's just take a scenario where the rabbit is out eating, and maybe a hawk comes after it, and it has the sense, and it runs as fast as it can back to its den. That hawk is getting closer and closer and closer. The talons are out, ready to grab it. But let's say the rabbit gets into the den just before the hawk strikes. Now, if we look at the rabbit, its heart is racing. Its respiration is off the charts. It's producing all kinds of what are called fear hormones, only they're not, they're fright hormones. All kinds of fright hormones. The mind is racing. It's crazy. It's scared to death. Now that is fright, and it's legitimate because it's a response to danger. But you see, if that rabbit had the capacity to do fear like humans do, now some animals do have a little capacity for it, and you'll know as soon as I tell you about it. See, what humans do, if that rabbit had the kind of fear that most humans have, it would never come out of its den again. Because everywhere there's a threat. And it would remember all the times it was had near misses. And it would project that. And it would think, they're all waiting just outside my den. I dare not go out. Its heart rate would take off. Its respiration would take off. Its body would go into a stress mode. All these fright hormones would go off. And the balance, the bodily balance would come totally out of whack. That's what humans do. And they do that sometimes when there is actually no threat present. And so we have to be very wise about, we don't want to get rid of fright. That's legitimate. Fear, sometimes people have worked lifetimes and are still rolling fears of things they believe happened to them in maybe a life 200, 300, 400 years ago, are still rolling it right through into the now. Well, there's a reason for that. The subconscious is probably saying, you know, I'd like to get rid of this fear here. It's been around for a long time. And so it gives the signals. And that's your cue, if it happens to you, to sit down and look at it. And I'll give you a little meditation to work with fear. It's very important that you do this. And it's a 15-minute meditation, so it's not long. You'll need a little clock with you because it's divided into three segments. You will need also a notepad and a pencil. And of course, the first thing you do is you sit and relax, and you align yourself, touch into your deep space like you would with any meditation. You follow the breath for a while until you feel the body relaxing and the breath slowing, coming slower and slower and slower, and then you glance at the clock, and for the next 5 minutes, you inwardly ask yourself, where does this fear come from? Now, the mind will answer. It will say, oh, it comes from whatever it says. And then your job is to tell the mind, no, I think it's older than that. Where does this fear come from? And you ask it over and over and over for the space of that 5 minutes. And you just listen to what the mind has to say. It's giving you some feedback that it needs to dump. And this is how it's doing it. So you're just listening. But in every case, you say, no, I think it's older than that. And even if it says, oh, I bet it's from that past life back in 1650 when I was there when that comet went over. And you say, no, I think it's older than that. And basically, for 5 minutes, you do just that. Then, for the second 5 minutes, and this is where you take some notes, you ask the question inwardly, when this fear is here, how does it move through my body, and how does it move through my mind? And so you just take notes. So my hands get clammy or sweaty. I don't breathe deeply. My breath is shallow. My heart beats too fast. These are all physical things. How about the mind? Well, maybe you do a version of mental breath holding as well as a version of physical breath holding. You see, maybe the mind starts to obsess. Maybe the mind gets a little paranoid and starts looking everywhere. When this fear is here, how does it move through my mind? Maybe it causes me not to trust myself. Or you make the list, because it doesn't matter really how it moves through anybody else. It's important that you see how it moves through you. 5 minutes. And then for the third 5 minutes, you ask this question. When this fear is here, how does it control me? Now, of course, that's the one question the ego doesn't want to deal with, because the ego uses fear. It's kind of a manipulation to control you. Sometimes it will keep you from speaking the truth. Sometimes it will keep you from asking an important question. Sometimes it will make you sick, and you're controlled when that's happening. At other times, you might find that you suddenly can't get words out. You stutter, or you lose your access to words or something. That's fear controlling you, you see? And so then you don't do anything with that list at this point. You just put it away. And you want to do this meditation 3 or maybe 4 times a week, no more than that. Three is adequate. Maybe you do it, you space them however you want to space. One will be a shorter time. It doesn't matter. 3 times a week. And I recommend doing this not when you're tired at night. If you can, get up a few minutes earlier so you can do it first thing in the morning, because you're fresh. You'll have probably better insights about that, about what's going on. And so then you just leave it. At the end of 2 weeks, you'll have done it 6 times. Then you get your notes out. And that's when you compare to see if they were the same each day, when you listed how it moved through your body, how it moved through your mind. They'll probably be fairly similar. But you'll find that one day you had an insight about something that you hadn't had before. And that's worthy of notice. And then you go to that last question. How does this fear control me? And that's where the real gems for harvesting will be. And then you set up some kind of an antidote, you know. So maybe you pick one of them. And maybe you're going to have a situation that day where that would normally cause you fear. Maybe you have to speak to some people in a public way. And the mind is telling you, oh, they won't listen to you. They don't care what you have to say. They don't think you're very bright. You know, and if you really believe that, it's very interesting, because when you go in to speak, they're probably all going to be busy doing something else, you see. But if you can walk in command of your topic and in command of your own inner space, where you look out with curiosity, wondering, who will hear what I've got to say? Will it be meaningful? What will happen in this room? Well, you can't always know what will go forth from the room, but go in with curiosity and have self-possession. And if somebody's not listening, you ask them, why aren't you listening? You might get some feedback that's helpful. But you see, you don't do it in a state of fear, because that will for sure kind of bring the house down around you, and not in the best way, you see? So that mind is part of divine mind. I know it seems like it's yours. And that is the way people experience it. It's as it should be. But the most important thing about recognizing, I should tell you one more thing about fear. Of all the emotions or the feeling states, fear is probably the most contagious. That's why it works so well with viruses, because viruses are contagious too. And so you don't really know when someone passes on a virus, are they passing on just this thing that may or may not be alive, or are they passing on the fear that made it possible for the virus to come in, settle, and take root and grow. So if you, let's say, were to walk into a room where something had happened, you don't know what's happened, you just suddenly walk into the room and there's a lot of people in there, and for some reason someone said something that scared them all. Or it could be like somebody yelled fire, but that's probably too obvious. Let's take a different thing. Let's say you're in a high-rise building and you're taking the elevator up, and the elevator is a little bumpy, and you don't feel anything else going on except the elevator. But let's say in the time it took you to ride the elevator, there was a little earthquake, and the people in the room where you're going all felt it. And they panic because they're on the 26th floor, and who knows if this building's going to stand up or not, and on and on and on. You step into the room and instantly, what? You're afraid. But you see, it's interesting. You don't even know what you're afraid of. You just feel the fear because it's in the air. Fear is contagious. When, if you were to, let's say, maybe drive through a strange city that you didn't know, and you happen to go by a corner where, let's say, a few hours ago, someone was mugged and killed, you'll find that you're just driving through and suddenly you're afraid. You don't even know what you're afraid. Nobody's there even to tell you what happened. You just feel that fear. And most people will take it on. They will think, I should be afraid. Or they just don't question it and they remain afraid. But this is where your good, solid, logical, analytical self can help you. It maybe can't, well, it, you can replace the fear with something else. It doesn't mean it won't come back. But every time you truly face it, it gets less. It doesn't come back quite as strongly. Or maybe there's some event where it comes back really strongly, but you face it again. And if you understand how karma works across a stream of lives, it's the symbol I would use is like a helix, you know, where the bottom rung is quite small. But as it goes around, each rung that goes higher is a wider swing or a broader, has a larger scope. Well, that's kind of the way karma works. The first time something happens, you know, it's maybe not that big of an event. Or maybe you just don't pay that much attention to it. Some animal got away and charged through and scared you as a child or something. And then, but if that's not worked on or addressed in some way, then the next time it comes around, it's bigger and it's more intense. The next time it comes around, it's bigger and more intense. Why? Well, because it's building on the prior episodes of fear. But there's another reason. The subconscious is trying to get your attention, the attention of your conscious mind to say, oh, where is this coming from? I don't need this. Let me put it down. You see, the interesting thing is you can drop fear right in the moment. Most people don't know this. They sort of visualize fear as this dark cloud that comes around them and there's no way out. They get lost within it. And because they can't find their way out or can't find anybody to help them, it gets denser and thicker and denser and thicker. And that's kind of the way most people relate to their fear. But that's not really the way it is. It's just an idea. It's a notion based on prior notions that, because there have been so many of them, have become very strong in the present moment. There's not anything wrong with you if you can't figure out how to handle the fear. That's when you just say, touche, I give in, I'm going to feel it. And then you get on that meditation cushion, you say, I'm going to feel it now for 15 minutes, I'm going to feel this fear. Don't be surprised if in about 3 minutes it's gone. Because you see, any kind of energy that comes from the subconscious, you cannot sustain really for more than 2 minutes. You have to pick it up again, and then pick it up again, and then pick it up again. Because after about 2 minutes, the subconscious sublimates it, and it's not even something you're aware of. And so if you can understand that this is the way fear works, it should give you a way to work with it. I don't want to tell you to just cope with it. I'm not too much for coping strategies. They're helpful at times, yes. But if all you learn to do is cope, there's no transcendence happening, is there? There's no way that you're stepping out of the crystallized little ego mind that is controlling you in the moment and stepping into your vastness. But that vastness is a part of the divine. It's a part of what called forth, fueled, supports, and maintains the universe. That's not tiny stuff. That's big stuff. You're part of that. But you see, when fear comes, what does the mind do? It contracts and it shrinks and it helps the person feel very small and very ineffective. And that is the moment when you need your divine roots. You're not an accident. You didn't just happen here. I know there are people who think the whole earth is an accident. You know, some big eruption of the singularity sent all this stuff spewing into space, and it did. But then, you know, it was just happenstance that this one little planet happened to be at the right place from the sun where eventually water formed, and eventually life came into the water, eventually crawled up on the land, and on and on and on. That's not an accident. There's divine intention in all of it. Because if there weren't, I can tell you that various, let's say, we'll take a fish or even microbes, they would not reproduce true to form if there was not a divine plan. Impossible. Cells would start dividing. When a person gets cancer, what happens? It's because the cells are not replicating true to form. They've become damaged in the way they pass along their DNA. And so what you get is mutant cells, and these mutant cells then become cancerous. They attack the body. And of course, that can't even happen unless there's something going wrong with the way cells communicate. Normally, if communication is happening as it should, a healthy cell will recognize a cell that's not healthy and slough it off. If it's, let's say, it lands on the heart will release a little, part of its energy, part of it is a little fluid that makes the cell slip off. It cannot then take root and become a tumor, you see? So all of this is connected to mind. How dare we say that's not divine mind if one can create a reality that powerful? It's amazing. And so whenever you face hardships of any kind, some are mental, some are emotional, some are physical. I think we've got all three of those going on with the pandemic. We have whatever's happening at the physical level. And then we have all the emotional and mental reactions toward it. The mind goes into aversion, hates the virus and really hates anybody who's got it or who might possibly have it in the future. The mind, aversion, push away. And the emotions maybe go into fear. Maybe they go into helplessness. Maybe the person sits around and cries for most of the day because they're so distraught and they don't know what to do. And then the mind kicks in and decides, well, I'm so distraught. The mental, emotional body is so distraught. Mental body better take charge here, so I'll lash out at somebody. It's very interesting. And see, all of these reactions create consequences, don't they? And those consequences are ultimately what you call your reality. It appears to be real. And so this is where, why it's so important for you to be very, very wise and discern the difference between what is real and what is only really experienced. You do really experience all of these things until you are so filled with the light of your true nature that nothing can attach, neither a virus nor a cancer cell nor anything, you see? And I made that remark about 15 years ago to a group. I believe it was in Alaska. Anyway, there was a man that was there for the first time. And he said to me, well, what do you mean nothing will hurt me if I'm full of light? What if a truck runs over me? And I said, well, maybe that would hurt you. But, you know, more than likely, if you're full of light, you have the intuition not to be in the place where the truck is running wildly. You just wouldn't be in its path. And so it's, you know, it's always a little more complicated than these sometimes simplistic notions. But when you fill yourself with light, you honor your true nature. Now, I know that's, what is a light? What is light? It's not exactly like physical light, but it is an emanation of energy that while it does not register with the eyes in physical reality, it does register at other places. In fact, it goes out into the entire cosmos. for that cosmos is all connected. Nothing is truly separate. Nothing. It's just how you look at it. If you look from the big picture, you see a whole. If you look from the small, maybe individual picture, you see all these parts out there that maybe don't look like each other. You know, this galaxy doesn't look like that galaxy. One's a spiral, the other's just kind of a blob. It's, you have to look from the bigger picture. And I think that's what you're being called to do, given the circumstances that are arising right now on Earth. It's not a good thing to say, well, we caused this, so we should be punished. No. You caused it because you're trying to learn something, if in fact that's how it happened. And I'm not even going to speculate on that because I know you all have ideas already, or many of you do. You're better off without those ideas. You're better off just showing up and saying, what is life asking of me today? And can I show up to experience it, to be present for it, to bring radical attention to it? Or will I try to go away, check out, hide somewhere, and just pretend that nothing is going on? Now, you should know that something is going on. And what you are doing is taking care of yourself. Because those bodies that get viruses are also temples. Now, what is a temple? A temple is a place where people come to meet the divine. They meet each other as well. But a temple is a place that has been sanctified for something. It's been given a divine intention. And so maybe it's a place where people meditate. Sometimes it's a place where people give offerings. Often it's a place where people hear a teaching or hear something that reminds them of their true nature. That reminds them that the mind as they experience it is just a tiny artifact of divine mind, of pure, unmitigated, free-flowing consciousness. Words fail us a little bit. It's hard to describe. But the important thing is, what do you do with this knowledge? Most of you would readily agree that that's your truth. Is that evident in the way you're facing the responsibilities that you have right now? Some of you have families to take care of, and it's very important that you don't do anything that could infect them. Some of you maybe are very healthy and are not at risk at all. Don't flaunt that. Be of service. Serve others by your humility. Don't in any way move into arrogance, because arrogance is asking for a big lesson. It's always been that way, and it always will be that way. You know, most people don't like arrogance when they see it in somebody else, but they may be completely blind to when it creeps out in their own field of experiencing, emanating from their own, let's say, thoughts or speech or actions. And so it's all this wonderful and amazingly complicated balancing act. You are the divine, even though you don't always experience yourself that way. And if you do experience yourself that way, well, when it's real, it's quite humbling to realize that the divine is so invested in each little particle of its consciousness. It is so invested in supporting that piece to heal and to become a part of the whole again. Well, I promised some questions, so I guess I should have been talking a long time here, longer actually than I intended, but some of your higher selves were asking that I give a little more information. So what we can do is go for some questions now, if we have those. Dale, do we have anything on the chat that you'd like to share?
Yes, we have one from Alicia, and she's asking, is there something we can do to help others let go of the fear that they are exhibiting, other than just taking care of our own fear?
Well, you do have to take care of your own fear. That's absolutely correct. When it comes to others, I think the most loving thing you can do is be a good example. And maybe you say to them something kindly now. Don't say it in a way. Speak kindly and say, well, you know, I feel fear too. But I'm not going to let it rule me because it gets in the way of my having good relationships. And it gets in the way of my thinking clearly. And so I'm really working on my mind. And every time it comes up, I just tell my mind, okay, I'm going to drop it right now. It may come back. That's the way the mind works. But right now, I'm not listening. Thank you, mind. I'm just not listening. And I think it's so important to set a good example. I think that is the most important thing you can do, because you really can't get into anybody else's mind and work with it like you can work with your own mind. And so the best thing is to set a good example and do everything from a space of compassion, because you have had fear, and everybody has. You know what it feels like. It doesn't feel good. You don't like it when suddenly your heart just takes off because it's projecting there's danger out there when maybe there isn't any. And so you just come back home, put your hands over your heart, and tell yourself, I love you. I bless you. And I, the mind that is speaking right now, is opening to discover our true nature, our whole self, our vaster being. And I support you, but I won't listen when you tell me to be fearful. And I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's really about the best you can do. And then, of course, another thing you can do is, if you do that little meditation where you sit for 15 minutes and explore your own fears, before you sit down, or as you're sitting down and you're calming yourself, you may think, oh, I think I will dedicate whatever benefit I get out of this meditation to the person you're thinking of who has a lot of fear. In other words, by making a dedication, it's not that you don't get the value of doing it, you certainly will, but it goes to a bigger space and it involves somebody else. It demonstrates compassion and also understanding that you know what it's like to feel fear, you see? So thank you, Alicia. I hope that's helpful.
Okay. We have another one. Can we conquer the virus without harming the virus, even if we get affected because of our fear / poor immunity?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to rephrase it a little bit. I think I know what you're asking. In my earlier teachings with you, and I said it today too, don't hate the virus. And I even, in the earlier teachings, said don't think of taking care of yourself in terms of killing the virus. Because killing mentality, it's not something you want in your precious mind or your precious heart. I know, you don't want that. So you have to think of it a little bit differently. Do think of staying safe. You do think of cleaning surfaces. You do think of cleaning your hands. And if you think of it, maybe I have viruses on my hand, I'll let the water just run them down to their next level. And you see, you don't have to kill everything. You can just wash it away. So you take care that you wear clean clothing, and when you're out and for whatever reason you have to go out to get groceries or something like that, you come back, you take them off. You do those precautions, but think of it in terms of protecting the divine that is within you, rather than thinking of killing, 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 killing. That brings up a kind of obsessive mentality. And I have it in spades. They're just killing everything. And I guarantee you, take it from me, you don't want that thought in your precious mind. Now, like all viruses, I think there will be things that aid humans tremendously. The most important thing, of course, is building up the immunity. And if agents are made from the realized immunity of some who have naturally healed from having contracted the virus, that's going to be the best thing, because it happens in the body naturally. Now, the macrophages and are those little white blood cells that sort of grab things that shouldn't be there. And it does it with basically viruses as well. And so it's all right to make them stronger so they can do their divine job. It's their dharma, you see, to protect the body. And that's really what you want to do. You want to strengthen your own cells so that they can do their divine work. And if you can do this, then number one, it will make a big difference in how much fear is felt. And yes, I do think there will be things that are very helpful. There may be a vaccine, but vaccines, I think it's time for humanity to say, wait a minute, we're in a different place now. When polio came along and you got the salt vaccine, that was seen as a truly wonderful gift. And it was. It cured a lot of people. But then with mass producing anything, there are always slip-ups. And trying to mass produce a vaccine, and I don't think any of the, well, I don't think any of the countries that we would call democracies really want the government to say they're going to be forcing vaccination for all. It should be a choice, but it may or may not be. These are all just parts of this interesting puzzle that's just now coming together. But yes, it is pure thoughts, kind words, caring actions go a long way to boost one's immunity. See? So I hope that's helpful for you.
Well, we're starting to get quite a few questions. And another question is, I've been thinking about the violet ray. Is there some way we might want to use it and work with it?
Well, yes, because the violet ray is often seen as, it manifests in what is called an etheric or esoteric violet flame. And that flame is good for burning away karma. And I'm sure you can all know that somewhere along the line, karma is playing into this pandemic. It has to. It's very complicated, so I'm not going to try to outline any of it. And it's somewhat different in every geographical region because humans participate in their own karma and they share their karma as well as their viruses and so on. So, yes, I think just using, I would recommend just visualizing a violet flame and stepping into it and just asking it to burn away all the karmic dross that is holding you back, perhaps causing you to get sick if you're sick, or perhaps setting up a state where you could contract the virus. So yes, it's good to burn that off. And that's I think you'll find it very powerful because so many people have used it so much that you get a little bit of a boost from everyone else that has used it, you see?
Okay. There's a couple of themes emerging, so I'm going to kind of combine a couple of questions. And one is, do you think this is going to go on for a long time or past 2020?
That depends on humanity. If everyone on this call, it's just 100 people, but if everyone on this call could hold a very solid vision of the virus suddenly disappearing, it would make a difference. Now, what we really need with 7.5 billion people, we really need about 1 million people to hold that, and we could take care of it in no time. That may or may not happen. So, but I will tell you, the kind of consciousness that people bring to their experiences of this whole thing, partly the virus, partly the pandemic, partly the way it's being handled, on and on and on and on, the mentality that they bring to it either strengthens the virus or weakens it. And it's not just the virus, it's maybe we should say strengthens the pandemic or weakens it. And what we want to do is weaken the pandemic, strengthen the immune forces in the self, and strengthen one's aliveness in the divine. That is, I cannot tell you how important that is. Most of you that have been around for a long time have heard me say it a lot. But it's you know, everybody has to get to whatever point they get to when they can really just receive it. It is your truth. I would not tell you that falsely. I gain nothing by that. I tell you the truth. You are a little piece of the divine. And when your mind and consciousness can open enough to receive more of it, you get more of it. period. That's why I think in engaging in spiritual practice is a wonderful thing to do in times of pandemic. You don't have, you're not going out there and doing a lot of things out in the world anyway. And it's so much better for you than watching the news all day long. That can be somewhat detrimental, as some of you have found out. You get depressed. You feel hopeless. Up comes the fear. The first thing you know, you're talking to somebody about how bad it is, and it's bad. That's true. In that experiential reality, it's bad. But you can create another experiential reality where it's good because you see or hold the vision of the divine, perhaps pulling this piece of itself, the virus, back into itself, or allotting it for a different journey, a different mission, a different something. It is part of the picture. And you have to stay with the big picture. But my dear friends, try to stay in the big picture. Yes, you have to dip into the little picture. That would be denial if you didn't. You do. You have to know how people hurt. And you have to see people are suffering. And you also have to recognize that some people have absolutely no defenses against the virus. Let's go take Yemen, for example, where we did all the mantra, or the country for whom we did all the mantra chanting. It's terrible that people don't have water. They don't have food. How will they ever fight something like a pandemic? And, you know, not much of the rest of the world gets a lot of news from Yemen. You have to really go looking for it. But it's tragic there. And that's not the only place, but that one comes to mind. Certainly the Syrian refugee issue is just... you know, from the perspective of the divine, we have to say, so why can some pieces of the divine not accept others? Oh, yes, there are religious differences. But what if we could just for a moment hold a bigger picture, or put it all within the violent flame and burn away the karmic dross that is really negatively impacting everyone? So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but it depends on humanity's collective field of consciousness. If humanity can begin seeing its way on the other side, can begin experiencing health, and if you haven't contracted the virus, you should be getting up every day giving thanks for your healthy body, your healthy mind, because the virus has not come into you yet. And you're keeping that temple and all of its contents very, very safe. And if we can share that among people, it will make a difference, indeed. Left to other, let's say, management, it might go on a long time. And as we get further into, a little further into the summer, I can probably be a little more specific. Right now, it's kind of, from an energetic standpoint, Earth is bedlam. It is a mess because there is so much anger. There is so much fear. There is so much hatred that has been stirred up, not just since the virus. That's been going on in recent decades. The hate has been arising. But the interesting thing is, if you can see that that's tied to what the collective experience is. And you know, you can't make somebody else quit hating. All you can do is send them compassion, or maybe not send them compassion, but hold them in your heart in compassionate love. Because I guess you can usually, if a person is into hate, they don't feel your compassion when it comes anyway. But you can still generate compassion for everyone who has not yet seen through the mighty illusion, indeed delusion, of hatred. It's very powerful, and it does play into what's happening. So best you can do is keep your own mind clean, keep your body clean, and wish that for everyone else. Spend some time being grateful for all those who have not. I mean, many, many, many people are not going to get this virus. So it's time to be thankful for them as well, and count yourself in. Thank yourself. You're doing what you need to do. See? Thank you.
Second part of... that question, which I, you know, you may have just answered, is what impact will this event have on the leadership of the United States as a light for the free world? Will it restore the character and leadership of the U.S.?
Whoa, that is a big question. what I think we have to focus on is what is being restored in so many people, a sense of love, compassion, just like the people we talked about in Italy who every evening at 6 p.m. come out and they start singing just any kind of songs with their neighbors. They weren't doing that before this. So there are these arising surges of compassion and caring that are really important. And I would say whenever you talk to people, you know, talk to somebody on the phone, think of one of these things to talk about so that you're not just talking about and putting all this energy into the disease and what's wrong. There is a lot of mismanagement at the top, certainly in the U.S., in other countries as well. But in some ways, I think it's a bit more shocking when it's seen so obviously in the U.S. because partly of this desire to be a beacon of light, and that's not exactly what's going on right now. So there is a lot of karma, there is a lot of delusion, there is even a lot of desire for manipulation, and none of those things are going to help this pandemic pass. You can kind of help your leaders by getting it to work at the lower level. Indeed, if it works enough among citizens, it will probably get through. Although some leaders, as you probably know, can be quite impervious. And it's not just in the United States. Some are really in it to keep their image up. Some really want to quash the press so people don't get information. Again, it's not just the U.S. That's happening here, but it's happening in a lot of other places as well. So if you can kind of see that you're bigger than all of this, you're bigger even than the pandemic. And if you have to stay in your homes for 6 months, you may not have to, but if you do, can you be big enough to draw the divine into your very pertinent momentary experience? Because that's what we have to do. And I know it's very tricky because we're talking about an outbreak that involves the whole globe. And yet no one of you can control the whole globe. You can't even direct its focus. All you can do is live as an example of your truth. And that is really important. And so share the good stories. Share if you have a sewing machine, make some masks, get them to the hospitals. Do something that feels like compassionate response to a very bad situation. You see? Good.
This is also a kind of a combination of a couple of questions. I'm noticing Christians are connecting to the virus, to the period of tribulation before the second coming. What's the best way to respond to them? And is all of this preparing us for the second coming of Christ?
Well, those of you who have been around have heard me say that I believe the second coming is in the hearts of people. In terms of the what is called the Great Tribulation, I think you just have to honor people's beliefs. You don't have to say you're right, you're wrong, you're anything. I just think, I find this really interesting to talk to you about this. I might say, do you have a contingency plan? I mean, what if people begin to get well? What if the world begins to heal and connect globally again? And so I think, you really can't talk anybody out of their beliefs. And it's true that they hold those beliefs for a reason. Some have fear that they can kind of manage by projecting fear on the divine, like the divine wants us to be afraid, or the divine punishes us, or putting it out there, then maybe they don't have to deal with what's going on inside. But they're doing that to learn something. You see, all the mistakes people make, and I'm not saying this is a mistake, because for the people that hold it, it's what they need right now. And for the people who don't, you don't need that right now. But life is fraught with mistakes. You know, the great Buddhist sage Talopa, impressive teacher, brilliant, highly realized. And He believed that you have to take in the whole scope of life, every bit of it, and he lived that way. In fact, he earned his living by day grinding sesame seeds. By night, he procured clients for a brothel. Not that he thought that was good, but that he had to say, oh, this is all part of life. People are at this level for a reason. And he could see that just locking them all up or making them all wrong or something was not going to cure anything. It wasn't that he thought it was okay. He didn't think anything about it because he'd reached that place where his mind just didn't engage. But when you look at the world, how many differences there are and how many levels. I mean, if you just take Christianity alone, there are so many levels. And that's true for humans too. In the older systems, we would say that people err or make mistakes or do unkind things, commit crimes, because they just aren't able to reflect the divine vibration at its highest level. Their evolution only allows them to reflect some energy at a low level, and thus they can hurt others. So I think it's always interesting when you think about how to talk to people. I think you just listen. And you know, if nothing else, you can say, that's really interesting. And then... You might find something in there where there's common ground, where you can agree on something. Does the world need a cleansing? Yes. Will a cleansing probably mean some kind of tribulation? I think you can make a case for that. Because without it, nobody's aware. You see, or not nobody, but many people are not aware that anything needs to change. So I think there are always ways to find common ground. But you do it by honoring the person, knowing that whatever he or she believes right now is serving them in some way. And you want to bless that. May they get the lessons they need. May they accomplish their evolution and move to their own next level. You see, again, it's certainly not an answer that we can apply in every situation, but it gives you a process. Look for common ground, approach in compassion, and realize that everything has a purpose.
Okay, here's another combination of questions. Do you see the pandemic as a manifestation of planetary karma flowering at this time? Is the lesson for us to learn to develop our compassion for everyone, including the virus itself? And is it beneficial to send mass energetic healing to all the doctors, nurses, and support staff that are serving the coronavirus patients?
Yes, yes, and yes. If you remember the three questions.
And then another question is, how do we you balance really seeing and honoring the actual suffering of the virus is causing and holding for potential positive outcomes like reduced pollution and going to a place of seeing the death suffering as an acceptable price to pay for what good may come out of this?
I would urge you, let me back up. One of the things that the mind does is it ascribes meaning to everything. And that's helpful all along the way. If you can make meaning out of something, it helps you deal with it. But sometimes the mind runs away with it too. And while there will be people who have the karma to contract the virus, there will also be people who do not have that karma. They have the karma to go free of it. And so when it comes to working globally, as I think our questioner sees, it's really tricky. It is good that the pollution has come down. It is good that birds can be heard and can be seen because certain areas that were heavily polluted are not right now. So these are all positive events. I would be a little bit careful in tying them to the virus. Now, we can see a connection, of course, because had the pandemic not occurred, everything would have gone on business as usual. The planet would still be choking and coughing, and so on and so forth. We see that. But I think if you can just, the key is to hold it all in some vaster whole. And that vaster whole should say, we don't know how this will turn out. But when you see positive things occurring, make not only a mental note of them, talk about them. Somebody sent out an email that said, I heard that in Wuhan, the birds are once again heard. They have not been heard for a couple of generations. And see, nature is there. Nature is the healing force. Granted, the activity of humans has really pushed the envelope and maybe pushed it to a place where it's, we don't know if Earth can fully come back. But if Earth can catch her breath during this, because humans have been silenced or put in sequester, then let's celebrate that. As for, I don't think you can really say that the people who are dying are paying the price for the other good things that are happening. I understand it maybe looks that way. And what is the price? How, should we put a limit on what's acceptable death? I don't think so. I think you should want everybody to heal in whatever way is possible. But remember this, you can heal into life, but you can also heal into death. And I suppose that could sound like I'm just trying to make it sound pretty, but I'm not. It's really true. I can tell you, I facilitate many, many, many people who transition from physical reality into the next one. And I can tell you, some people take healing in dying. Now, it's very complicated when you're dying from something like the effects of this or advanced pneumonia. Because you see, in both cases, you can't get your breath. Your breath is your prana, it's your life force. It's pretty important. And so if you die in that state where you can't get your breath, it could be kind of a difficult life, the next one, because what happens is at the point of death, and I realize that's probably more flexible than most people know, but there is a point when one is considered dead. And whatever was in the mind at that point sets the field for the next life. Now, I say this, and then I will tell you, don't get dogmatic about it, but that's generally the way it works with karma. So, no, it isn't all right that thousands of people lose their life or lives so that Earth can go clean for a little while. Don't think in those terms. I know it looks that way. But what you have to do is you say, every day, say, for all of those who die today, may you use this step to gain healing. May you have your healing. And say it with earnestness. Mean what you're saying. And you may not be able to see the difference that makes, but I can, because, as I said, I help a lot of people across the threshold.
Okay. Another combination of questions. Anxiety appears to be the root cause for increase of fear, a ways to get rid of it. And my question is about this deep sense of peace and calm I have been tapping into. I am certainly not discounting the fear and anxiety people are facing or what we're experiencing as a global family. This feeling or sense I experience is hard to put into words, and it also ties into a deeper connection and understanding and seeing the earth and all.
Very good. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because yes, there, you see, that peace is when you step into enlightened mind. When you step into fearful mind or ego mind, it can be very traumatic. It can be very difficult to manage. But when you step into essence mind, the mind that is part of divine mind, oh yes, it's probably got some flaws when it comes into the human state. Humans have a way of doing that, but it's still essentially divine. And that peace you're talking about is what I wish for everyone, not only on this call, but all around the world, because it means you've made some kind of an alignment with the heart and maybe the heart of the cosmos, or perhaps the you have relaxed into the realization that you're okay. You're okay. And so while you don't have to see that as versus the fear and anxiety, you see them both together. There is something about learning how to hold the tension of the opposites that is exceedingly important. you're going to see a lot of seeming opposites show up. So on the one hand, you have abject fear, trauma, anxiety. On the other hand, you have divine peace, great natural peace, to use a Buddhist phrase. But the idea is to take that peace, and if you can, share it. Maybe you can only do it mentally, because you're not sitting with 100 people in a room trying to say, okay, now here's how we're going to get to this peace. But you share it. And you let your mind think of everybody. I mean, it's kind of interesting, the people that have been trying to give you reports and give you the news so you know what's going on in the world, some of them are also getting very sick because they were out in the field and they had the karma to contract the virus. I say that, and I mean, it is true, it does work that way. There are people whose karma, they just won't get it. But there are other people who have the karma to get it. But be very careful. Don't let the aversive mind come in and say there's something wrong with them or they're bad. That's, karma's not about good and bad. People maybe interpret it that way. And clearly, sometimes people in the height of karma do some things that are pretty bad. But that's not what it is. It's about getting back to find this true, deep, profound vibration of the divine that is there. And when you can tap into that, even if you're not trying to do it, that peace just descends. Many people feel that peace is something that descends on them. They kind of sometimes feel it like a little blanket or something coming down around them in their energy field. And I think that's a good way to look at it. Peace descends from the divine, you see? And most people think of the divine as being up somewhere, and that's okay. Maybe you could think of it as being out and about and around everything. But the peace is really important. And just you, from a space of peace, if you can just notice what happens and try not to evaluate it too much, because I can tell you the mind will make that a very sticky wicket very quickly. So hopefully that's helpful.
I have another question. I'm hearing that 5G will make people sick and die because of the radiation. And how do we combat 5G?
I don't think you can combat it. I think it's coming. There are some negative effects on the brain and the immune system with all of these electromagnetic frequencies that are flying around. And yet, it's what's happening right now. So we have to be realistic. And it doesn't look like countries who want this will be dissuaded from using it. People selling it make money. There are new gadgets. People make money, and people don't really have, you know, a lifespan is so short that often people don't have an idea of the very big picture. And so I think it is something that's coming because, you know, what the end of the Piscean Age was about was really pushing technology as broadly as it could be pushed. And so when that happens, it's likely that there will be some deleterious effects of it because, well, there are people who are in complete denial that these energetic waves do anything to anybody. And then there are those who cannot even stand to be in the cities because not only do they hear this energy passing through high wires if they're there, and they hear the electricity in the walls of buildings. People who can't, who are not that sensitive, you see, they have no idea that this is true for anyone. So it's going to be very difficult to pinpoint in any way that's helpful for the masses what all of this does. But as I said, I think if you do things you can buy, I would recommend little stickers that negate the fields of energy that you can put on your cell phones. You can buy some of those that they're helpful. And then you can use the phone farther away from you. Probably not a good idea to put it up because even with less intensity, with 3G, basically, it was found that in about 7 seconds, the brain begins to respond to that energy. So since the 5G is just that much more intense, you may want to use your speakerphones for sure. But basically, it's you'll just have to do your best with it. If you can get your children off their digital devices, I think that would be really helpful. I think some of the addiction problems that we're seeing that seem physical for many people, particularly with the opioid crises that are happening in all these different countries. Some of that does have something to do with how their brains are responding to all of these electromagnetic frequencies. So sadly, I think it is here. But some people are pretty effective at putting themselves in a kind of a protective bubble. It may not filter out everything, but anything that you can do to help is good. You've got a temple to protect. You've got consciousness that's in that temple that you want to protect. So I do think there are some negative effects of 5G. I don't like to get off on it too much because I can get you all upset about it, but what can you do about it? You're not the ones making the decisions or selling the product or the products that go with it. So what we have to best do is, when you really recognize yourself as light, divine light, when you really get that, nothing's going to hurt you. Nothing. And so this is an evolutional process, isn't it? I mean, you have all these people trying to evolve together. And there is kind of a drag effect of those that aren't really efforting to evolve. And so those who are really trying to evolve, you kind of have to pull the rest of them up from time to time. And it holds the process back a little bit. If everybody were on the same page, this planet could be enlightened in about 10 seconds. But we're not there yet. And so because you came to love people who are here, because you came to offer them compassion and hopefully some wisdom also, because of that, you have to work with what you have. And that's kind of what we can do with it. I hope that's helpful.
Well, we have time for one more question. And and here it is. There is fear attributed to the global economic downturn. Stock markets are in free fall, businesses are going into cash flow issues, and employees are laid off. There is doubt leading to fear of the future. Do you see this improving, or is it dependent on the virus being controlled?
That's a really good question, and it's quite complex, really. Certainly from the perspective of the markets, the world is changing. And there will be significant changes. Many of, particularly the smaller businesses, may not have the funding to set up and start again. And that means there are people who don't have jobs. Yes. And this is where you can look at this and say, well, this does kind of look like a great tribulation, because there's all kinds of fallout. The world has, until recently, the world was finding a way to connect through trade. Certain countries made things and shipped them all around the world, so there was connection there. Not that each country had to do only what it could do, only for itself and nobody else. So I saw the opening up of trade lines as really something that was helpful for the evolution of the planet. But there are problems with that as well, because you get these mega companies who tend to be quite mercenary rather than they lose their compassion, you see. And so that needs to be cleaned up. If you have an idea or a product that will really serve humanity, shouldn't we allow it to serve humanity? I'm not saying it should be given away free, but I'm saying it should be treated as though it is, people think they get these ideas and they're their ideas. That's not the way it works. The idea is out there and somebody was receptive to receiving it. And so it gets very confusing, because people think of the mind thinks of itself and is a very powerful being. And so it seems like all of these things are kind of on the trimming block right now. They must be trimmed. And it isn't fun to go through. We could have been doing it for the past 30 years, slowly, gently, whatever. Certainly since the beginning of 2013, energies that surround the planet were changing in a radical way since that time. And maybe it's the resistance to making the softer change, the resistance to that, that has created this thing that is now so big. And so you must deal with the bigness. I'd like to tell you that you're exempt from that, but none of you are. You're on earth at this time. So it is tricky to see. But yes, when the markets fall, everything has to change. We can use the pandemic as maybe the point where the change got kicked off in a big way. It is a huge shift. It's not fun. It's scary for some people. And it is, a lot of people are facing a lot of unknown right now. So we have to have compassion for all of that. And yet, I don't think anybody who really looks at the earth would say it doesn't need a cleanup or a wake-up call, you see? So this is just something we have to do. You have to remember, humanity is a family. I know many people like to divide it all up and say, well, those people believe this way and those people do this, and which is ludicrous. From the perspective of the divine, it's ludicrous. Humanity is a family. And what I know is that if the family comes together, not only will the crises all be handled, you will be amazed at the literal waves of creativity that kind of flow through human consciousness. It can't be any other way. When the priorities are right, and when people are in a state of don't know, this is very powerful to be in don't know. You don't have the answers then, you see? And so you're open to something else arising, something else coming. And so it is love your neighbor, your other family members. Be compassionate and kind. And don't be ashamed to say we're in don't know right now. Nobody has the answer. And while I'd like to tell you a different case, that would only be bedlam if we thought one person had an answer. Now, many people have pieces of multiple answers. And when humanity can turn loose of the ego and just open to the presence of who they really are, I know that probably sounds idealistic and pie in the sky. That's not going to happen in 5 minutes. But those of you who can do that, you got to work overtime. Because humanity needs you right now, you see? You have to work overtime. And then we'll see how it goes. I know numerous of us on this plane do send energy. We're not really numerous, but we say that because you kind of think of us as different masters, and that's okay, because in your reality, everybody has a different body, you see? There is a huge field of energy being beamed to Earth every day, really with the goal being to lift people, to let them feel lighter in a time of great heaviness. And that's not going to stop, I guarantee you. We work overtime. And so I want you to work overtime too. And we'll see. I'm hesitant about putting any dates on it. And the reason is then there are people go out and say, well, Master said this. And they try to make certain things happen or whatever. And that's, you see, if I could give you the date, and I won't. But if I were to say, okay, on August 19th, 2021, it'll all be over. That would change everybody's experience. And there would be so much energy put on that date in ways that might not be all that helpful, that we would be creating bedlam, craziness. So what we have to do is stay in the moment. And I know that's hard. It's hard when things seem normal. But for many people, things are not that abnormal. They're just not going places like they used to do, which is probably good for them. Maybe they can sit still and listen to that still small voice within that calls them into a vaster presentation of who they are. And that would be a good thing. But yes, the global markets are in trouble right now. We're going to have to wade through this. But again, so much is happening with those of you that heard the astrological offering I did, I told you that as we move out of 2020 and into 2021, right at the end of 2020, there's an astrological configuration that will move a certain conjunction into a new astrological sign, which is an air sign, Aries. And that's the sign of ideas. could they come at a more needed time? So you're moving into a time when new ideas, good ideas, and people are going to feel inspired. Not probably not tomorrow, but they're going to feel inspired. That's just part of how this is going to work out. But I can't tell you, or I won't tell you, a date, because I actually could be wrong. I could tell you what it looks like today. But then with the challenges they have, may push that date further out or draw it in closer. So it's confusing if I do that. But if you can just know that you have to be at peace with yourself, and you just have to say, yes, I don't know what is required of me, but yes. And you relax into that, you will find peace. And who knows, maybe you can teach some other people to do that as well.
Well, thank you so much, Master. This has been incredibly powerful. And I know that I can speak for everyone how much we deeply appreciate your teaching and guidance for us. And and then I'd like to turn this over to Francie.
Well, thank you, Dale. And thank you, Master. Thank you, Kathleen. And thank you to each and every one of you. I could feel the attention on this call. The people were literally listening to every word. And we are so fortunate to have such a wise being. And for those of you who haven't had the privilege of hearing Master DK before, I think you will agree with me that the wisdom is so clear and lucid and simple and easy to follow. I just want to say that we had a capacity of 100 people on this call, and we reached it before the call began. So I've been hearing from many people during this call who wanted to get on and who were not able. So we're going to make this available afterwards. And I would really like to encourage each of you to share this. If you receive this teleconference, take the opportunity to send it on to somebody who you think could benefit from it. You know, people are really open at a time like this. They're much more open now than they are in when it's business as usual. And I think people are hungry for this type of wisdom. So please send the message on. And Kathleen and Master, thank you so very much. We're incredibly blessed by your presence.
You're very welcome. I hope it's been meaningful for everyone, and that we too feel in community. I know we're all over the world, but in some way that maybe avoids definition or description, we're also together, and I celebrate that. Thanks so much. Master left just a little while ago. So anyway, thank you, thank you, thank you.